Hi, this is Wayne Zell, and you're listening to a replay of a Blueprint for Wealth broadcast from March 23rd, 2008, and it's with my special guest, Vince Griffin. The topic of discussion on this broadcast is buy-sell agreements. So I hope you enjoy the podcast, and here we go. In the first segment of the show today, Vince, we're going to be talking about a very much talked about topic on this show, and that's buy-sell agreements.
Right. Now, I know you've talked about this before in the past, but tell us again what a buy-sell agreement is and why we use it.
Basically, a buy-sell agreement gives the owner of a closely held business a blueprint or roadmap to purchase or buy out the interest of a co-owner if he dies or even becomes permanently disabled so he's unable to work in the business. This is a tool for closely held business owners, so listen carefully. It also only applies if there are two or more owners in the business, even if one of the owners holds a minority interest, i.e. less than 50% in the business.
Right. So are there different kinds of buy-sell agreements?
Absolutely. There are two main types and then variations on these two themes. The IRS recently issued a private letter ruling that approves of a creative structure for conducting a buy-sell arrangement that cures some of the defects in the mainstream techniques. In this segment, we're going to focus on the basic buy-sell structures and the currently used variations. In our next segment, so please be sure to tune in, we will focus on the new structure approved by the IRS and why it makes sense to use it. In each case, we're going to discuss these structures with a focus on life insurance that's used to fund the purchase obligations of the surviving or remaining shareholders or owners. We're also going to focus on corporate structures, but this discussion also pertains to other business entities such as partnerships and LLCs.
All right. Well, that sounds good. So what are those two basic types of buy-sell agreements you mentioned?
Well, the first type is known as a cross-purchase agreement. And in this type of arrangement, each surviving owner basically purchases the shares of the deceased shareholder directly from his estate or trust.
Okay. Are there advantages of using a cross-purchase agreement?
Yes, particularly where there are just two shareholders. Each shareholder acquires a life insurance policy on the other shareholders. So if one shareholder dies, the insurance proceeds are paid to the remaining shareholders who, according to the buy-sell agreement, must use the proceeds to purchase the deceased shareholder's shares. In this way, a surviving shareholder receives a step up in the tax basis of his or her shares. So that's one advantage, getting that tax step up. In addition, if the corporation has enough cash to fund all or a portion of the buyout of the deceased shareholder, you can draft the agreement flexibly so that the shareholders can wait and see before using the insurance proceeds to fund the buyout. Instead, the shareholders could cause the corporation to use the excess cash to buy out the decedent. If the deceased shareholder's estate gets paid for the shares, the remaining shareholders can keep what's left over or keep the cash in the company. So this provides additional flexibility in the buy-sell agreement.
Well, isn't there some danger in structuring the arrangement this way? I mean, couldn't the surviving shareholders just walk away with the proceeds?
Theoretically, no, but practically, yes. Great question. That is, even though the buy-sell agreement says they must use the proceeds to purchase the deceased shareholder's shares, the surviving shareholders don't always follow the script, if you know what I mean, which means the decedent's estate would have to sue the remaining shareholders to enforce the contract, and then things, of course, get messy.
Right, right. So is there anything that you can do to protect the deceased shareholder's family in that event?
Absolutely. One variant on the cross-purchase agreement where the proceeds are received by the remaining shareholders is to have the proceeds paid instead to an escrow agent who's appointed by the deceased shareholder or his personal representative. At least this will assure that the proceeds are used for the proper purpose. Another technique is to have the policies held in irrevocable trusts with independent trustees who then can also make sure that the proceeds are used properly.
Right. Okay. So those are advantages. How about disadvantages to the cross-purchase agreement?
Well, one significant disadvantage is that if there are more than two shareholders, you're going to need to obtain multiple insurance policies on the owners. So let's say you've got three shareholders, A, B, and C. A would need to buy insurance on B and C. B would need to buy insurance on A and C, and C, of course, would need to buy insurance on A and B. That means you have to purchase and maintain 6 policies rather than 3. Another disadvantage of a cross-purchase arrangement is that the policies and the proceeds are subject to the claims of the shareholders' creditors. So what if one of the shareholders declares bankruptcy? Your buy-sell agreement could force the other shareholders to buy him out, or not. And if not, or if you don't have enough cash to buy out the bankrupt partner, the creditors may be able to seize the insurance policies in satisfaction of their claims against the bankrupt partner.
Right.
That doesn't sound too good, does it?
Mm-mm.
And what if the shareholder just fails to pay the premiums on the policies, which is a more common occurrence?
Right.
The remaining shareholders should demand proof of payment under the cross-purchase agreement, but the administration of this provision can be burdensome and is not always followed by the parties. Yet another disadvantage of a cross-purchase is that the premium burden is allocated based on the cost of insurance of each other's shareholder rather than their shareholder interests in the company. Of course, this can be overcome through the use of bonus arrangements to equalize the burden. Now, the trust-eed arrangement that I referred to a little earlier gets around two of these concerns by placing the insurance into irrevocable trusts, which are truly protected from creditors, and having an independent trustee maintaining this helps cure some of the problems. Although it cures the problems of multiple policies and creditor protections if properly structured, it creates new problems under the income tax rules. Without going into too much detail, the use of irrevocable life insurance trusts in connection with buy-sell arrangements could cause adverse income tax consequences, making the receipt of life insurance proceeds by the remaining shareholders after the death of the first shareholder taxable, which is entirely against why we use these arrangements.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So you have to be very careful about that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, you mentioned another kind of buy-sell agreement. What's that?
Sure. The other commonly used arrangement is known as a stock redemption arrangement, and it's often coupled with a cross-purchase agreement in the wait-and-see approach that I just mentioned a few minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
Under the stock redemption arrangement, the corporation redeems the shares of the deceased shareholder. That means repurchases those shares at his death.
Okay. Well, obviously, we're going to have some advantages to this arrangement. Can you run us through what those are?
First, there's only one insurance policy per shareholder. So instead of buying 6 policies like I did in the earlier example, we only have to buy 3. That cuts down on the administrative burden found in cross-purchase arrangements. Also, premium costs are allocated to the shareholders according to their percentage ownership in the corporation.
Mm-hmm.
So that cures another problem of cross-purchases.
Right.
And finally, it's easier to enforce compliance with the terms of a buy-sell agreement where there's a redemption arrangement and it's monitored at the corporate level than at the individual shareholder level.
Well, that sounds like pretty good stuff. So what are the disadvantages here?
Well, first, since the corporation is buying the shares directly from the decedent, the other shareholders don't get the tax step-up and basis of their shares to fair market value when the corporation buys those shares. Second, the insurance proceeds and the policies are subject to the claims of the corporation's creditors, maybe not the shareholders' creditors, but the corporation's creditors. Third, if the corporation is a subchapter C corporation, a regular corporation, the insurance proceeds may trigger alternative minimum tax for the corporation, which converts an otherwise non-taxable benefit into a taxable one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And fourth, if there's excess insurance left over, it may be taxable to the corporation.
Okay. What about for an S corporation? Are the results the same?
Well, actually, the results are slightly better for an S corporation than they are for a C corporation.
Okay.
The shareholders in an S corporation may get a partial step up in basis of their shares. In other words, because proceeds are coming into the company, they may get a share basis step up to the extent of their percentage ownership interest in the company. Now, there are creative ways to draft a buy-sell agreement for an S corporation to minimize the impact of this limitation, and we do so often. Also, there's no alternative minimum tax in an S corporation like we have in a C corporation.
Mm-hmm.
But the other problems that I mentioned before still remain. This is Wayne Zell, and you've been listening to part one of a replay of a broadcast from March 2008 of Blueprint for Wealth, dealing with buy-sell agreements. Stay tuned for a future podcast on the for the conclusion of this discussion of buy-sell agreements. If you'd like more information on buy-sell agreements or other aspects of estate planning, business planning, and tax law, please give me a call at 703-218-2177. Or if you would like, you can send me an email to wayne.zell@ofplaw.com or subscribe to my blog at www.blueprintforwealth.org for information, articles, videos, and podcasts of interest on topics dealing with taxes, estate planning, and business planning. Thanks for listening to Blueprint for Wealth.